Today is
May 20th,
2016, and this is Pat Kalshina, and I'm interviewing Anita Palmer. So Anita, would you give your date of birth and spell your name, please?
May 1st, 1947, and my name is Anita, A-N-I-T-A, Palmer, P-A-L-M-E-R.
Thank you. So let's begin with your arrival in Madison. And just, you know, why you were here, and so I'll just let you start.
Well, I was born in Madison. My parents were married right after World War II and settled in Madison. And so I was born at St. Mary's Hospital, and I grew up on Buckeye Road. My dad worked at Caterpillar, Nagelhart Caterpillar. My mother was a housewife. And so that's where I lived, and I have six siblings, so we all, believe it or not, were in this little tiny cracker box house on Buckeye Road. My dad finished off the upper level, so there were more bedrooms for us all, but then in 1959, they moved to the west side, to Meadowood. They built a new home there, and so I went to Frank Alice Elementary School, because it was near Buckeye Road. It was part of Monona Grove at the time. Then when we moved to the west, I went to Cherokee Junior High, Cherokee Heights, and then to West High School. And then my father unfortunately died when I was a senior in high school, so then I decided to stay at home, and I went to UW-Madison, helped my mom out and helped my family out. And at first I didn't know what to go into. My father didn't really approve of the sports and things that I was doing.
Elaborate. What were you doing in sports?
Well, it wasn't really anything organized, but in the neighborhood we played a lot. I played touch football, I played softball, I played baseball, I organized the neighbors and my siblings playing games and tag games and skating, ice hockey, sledding. You know, I was just kind of really from as far back as I can remember, like the person in charge, and get all these people organized so we can go play a game or something, or play something together. Is it we were outside a lot, and the neighbors would all come over, and so I found out I was good in sports. When I was in elementary school at Frank Alice, I had a PE teacher, Lester Wasby, I think Les was his first name, Wasney, and he gave me an award in fourth grade. He said I was the only fourth grader to ever get an award in GAA. And then there were track meets, and I got a couple ribbons in track. And so it gave me a sense of self-esteem, because coming from a big family, being the oldest child, you know, it was a sense of accomplishment and pride that I could do the sports. But I was terribly shy, but that was an outlet. So then when we moved to the west side, I was very fortunate at Cherokee to have a fantastic PE teacher, Pat Browning, and she encouraged me a lot. And I was a leader on some of the sports teams that we had there, and after school sports. When I got to West High School, there were no after school sports at all. It was just the opposite of Cherokee. But I had one PE teacher that I remember. Ina Temple was her name, and she, when I was a senior, she asked me, well, what are you doing? Are you going on to college? And I hadn't really thought much about it, you know, because my dad had just died, and I just didn't know what the heck was going on. And then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, I better make some plans. And so then I, you know, went to see the guidance counselor, and I really wanted to go away and be an architect, but I'd have to go out of state, and there wasn't the money for it. So then I stayed here, went to UW, and started out just in LNS, and then I took a PE class that was required at Lathrop Hall, and I found that I liked the teachers there. And so then the next year, my sophomore year, I decided to minor in PE, and then at the semester I decided to major in PE, so that I was fully into the PE program by the end of my second year. And I was also fortunate that there were some women who had formed a basketball team, an AAU basketball team, to play in the state tournament. So there were maybe 10 of us or so, and they asked me to be on the team. I had played in the City Rec League, and I didn't know anybody, and then I encountered these women, and they had a team. And so my team that I was on, we would play them, and anyway, I was pretty good in basketball at the time. Because they only had half-court basketball, mm-hmm. so I was a defender, so I was a guard. So I always loved just trying to guard their best players and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then back at school on campus, they said, you know, would you like to be on this team? And Joanne Walker was our first coach. She's a longtime resident of Madison. And so then I said, yeah. And so we went to the state tournament and we won. And we went to regionals. We were in state for a couple years, probably at least 3 years maybe. Linda Parchman, who was a grad student from, I think she was from either Alabama or Arkansas, she kind of organized the group. And so then I was very lucky to be invited by a Milwaukee team to travel with them to the national tournament, the national AAU tournament in New Mexico. So I said, yes, I would do that. So we took the train from Madison, or they all lived in Milwaukee. And every week I would take the bus, the Badger bus, to Milwaukee to practice once a week, $1.50 to take the Badger bus. And my friend that was on the team, who was a teacher, she would drive me home from Milwaukee to Madison, and then she'd drive back to Milwaukee. And so
did she have a crush on you?
No. She was her parents lived in Madison, so I think that might have been part of the reason why she did that. No, I was completely oblivious to any kind of crushes or lesbian things or whatever, except I had a crush on Miss Browning. I know that because I had a couple dreams about her, and I just idolized her practically. So then, yeah, and then in 1971, I think it was, I was invited to play on the Pan American basketball team. So I did that. I said yes to do that, and we went to Texas to train, and then Miami to train some more, and then it was in Cali, Colombia. And it was, you know, quite a learning experience, because I was the oldest player, but I was also the least experienced, because all of them had grown up in programs in high school or even junior high. A lot of them were from the South.
Yes, yes.
So they were very, very, very good players. But I, like I said, I learned a lot. And then when I came back from there, I just basically played some more AAU in Milwaukee and then in lacrosse. And then I finally stopped playing because I went back to school and got a job teaching and coaching. So then I was not really playing in organized sports anymore, but I still played with my team sometimes, my players. And I also, yeah, and so that was basically the young playing career. And I was gone, like, from Madison, like I said, from 1970 to 87. My mother moved to Green Bay in 1970, which was the best thing for her and her children, other children. I was already out of school. And so then I was teaching and coaching in the Midwest. Like, I taught and coached at several different places. Probably most notably, I was at Northern Michigan University for 7 years as a women's basketball coach. I had a partner by then, so we were there together. And then when I left there, I went to Beloit College for 3 years, mm-hmm. Coached there. And then I retired from coaching, except I did coach for 2 years. When I was trying to get into the public schools in Madison, I helped out with the Memorial freshman girls basketball team, and I was a varsity assistant 1 year with Steve Moss.
Uh-huh.
But that was the end of my coaching.
And why did you stop coaching?
It wasn't really fun anymore, and I saw how it had changed, like the parents especially. Mm-hmm. They were very demanding in an unfair way, I thought, because uh-huh. they were complaining about the coach, Steve Moss, that the team wasn't winning, and we were playing against like Janesville Parker and
yes,
some of these other
yes.
teams that were, they had like Division
One
mm-hmm. Players on them, and some of our girls didn't really start playing until they were freshmen, you know,
right.
So to say that it isn't, that we're not good because we're not coached well was the furthest thing from the truth. And I think it just wasn't fun. I just really didn't like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I still liked basketball, but I didn't like the politics. And that, so they even demanded a meeting with the athletic director, and the coach was present, and the AD, and then the parents were there, and I was there as the assistant. And I supported Steve fully because I thought he really did a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
But he quit after that. I think he went back to coaching boys. So I found that, you know, that just the parents were just more demanding. I mean,
it changed
a lot that way. So
did being a lesbian ever come up? I mean, what I know historically is the assumption that female athletes are always lesbians or often lesbians. So there's an assumption, which is often incorrect, that all the players, especially if they have short hair or they're taller and stronger. Did that ever happen for you in those early days?
No, it never did.
Okay.
The first time, when I was first teaching out of college, and I wasn't in a relationship, I was just playing basketball in Milwaukee, traveling from up north in Michigan where I was teaching to Milwaukee once a week to play, not even to practice. I practiced on my own.
Wow.
But so I wasn't in a relationship then. When I went back to school at UW-La Crosse in 1973, and that's when I met my future partner, who was a grad student there. And that was that's really where I always wanted to go to school, because it was a very strong PE program.
Hmm.
And so finally, after my first year of teaching, when I found how much I didn't know about teaching, especially health, I didn't know much about health, and I was teaching health. So I went back to school, and I was actually invited to play on the lacrosse, volleyball, and basketball teams. So I got to play for 1 year with them. And I had met my partner, and within a year, we were partners, and we lived together for 16 years, approximately. So, and it never came up at Northern Michigan. And it's really interesting because I've been back to Northern a few times, you know, in probably the past, say, decade or so. And I think most of my players are lesbians. And I had no idea, you know, that had happened or anything like that. But no one ever said anything to me. I was very conscious. I mean, I never went to bars, you know, because like especially in Marquette, Michigan,
right.
It was a more conservative area at the time. That was from 1977 to 84, and I was pretty much closeted. Jean and I lived together, and you know, I think everybody probably assumed that we were partners, but nobody ever asked me. I never volunteered the information.
Mm-hmm.
None of my players asked me or asked her, but. You know, we just lived together, and we were lovers and all of that. And then after our relationship ended, was more when I was into the teaching part, like I was working on campus at UW. And yeah, it just never came up. I don't know. And I would, like I said, I was pretty closeted. I mean, we had a couple friends that we did things with, we would visit or they would visit us, and our families were both totally accepting, but I never said to my mother, Jean is my lover, you know, I mean, we're partners, but we would sleep together in her house, and she never said we couldn't, and same thing with her mother and her father.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah, it was just, and I, partly for me, because I was clueless, you know, because I had left Madison. I didn't know anything about the lesbian community here. And actually, when I came back to Madison in 87, we were still living in the country, because I had coached at Beloit, and then I left Beloit and got this job at UW-Madison in the PE department. And we were still living together, but we were having a lot of difficulty as a couple. And part of the reason was that she got interested in another person. So there was a lot of conflict and tension going on with all that. And then our partnership ended. And so then I lived separately from her and have been on my own ever since. But it just never came up.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Some folks have such a journey, and it can be so terribly hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy for you that it didn't come up. I mean, that's good. So What were you doing at UW-Madison? You said,
I taught,
so you quit coaching and then you went to UW-Madison. Was that the next step?
Right, I went to Madison. I was teaching in the PE department, the general PE. It wasn't, used to be separate. There used to be a women's PE program and a men's. So in 87, I taught methods classes, I taught coaching classes, I taught activity classes. For 4 years, but it was a limited term contract. So no matter how good of a job you did, you weren't guaranteed of anything beyond the 4 years. So then after that, I was for a year or so, I was trying to decide what to do. Should I get a PhD? Should I move away? I interviewed like a couple places pretty far away, and I just didn't want to leave the Midwest. And then I got a job actually after that in the School of Education as an advisor. And I was there for 2 years. And then in the meantime, I was working on adding certifications because I decided I wanted to stay in Madison and I wanted to try to teach in the Madison Public Schools. So I subbed part-time and went to school. And then once I got my certifications and I was hired in Madison in the early 90s, I think it was about 1994, so, and then I was focusing pretty much on teaching, not coaching. But I did some things at the school I was at, like we had a student staff basketball game and things like that. And I brought in some UW players for the kids to see and meet.
And was this at East?
Or no, that was at Emerson.
At Emerson.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And you brought in UW players. Oh.
That was pretty fun, yeah. One of the players was this Katie Kattenbach, I think was her name. She was a three-point shooter. And so in our gym, we had kind of a low ceiling. So she was playing, and she had to adjust her shot because
she
of the height
arc.
Of her ceiling. But she managed okay. But yeah, and so then I taught until 2011. But my journey wasn't an easy one. I had a lot of... when my relationship with Jean ended, I was devastated, especially because there was another person involved that I knew. And I just thought I just couldn't imagine that, you know, because I really cared about her. I loved her, and I thought she loved me, and I thought, you know, I was happy we moved to Madison because we could be out.
Yes.
You know, whereas
finally.
Before we couldn't be.
Yes, yes.
And so then I just, yeah, so when that ended... I will say I had a couple of very brief involvements for a couple of years in there that were just horrible. One was worse than the next. And so then I got into some counseling. So I was in counseling for 20 years.
Good for you.
And that helped me a lot. So I haven't really been in a relationship, you know, probably for at least 25 years. I've been in what I've called involvements, but not relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that for me, I don't know, I think I lost trust, you know, in people. But then I didn't know myself very well. I wasn't out there. I wasn't like, you know, just wasn't, I don't know. I think I kind of, in a way, became somewhat reclusive for a while.
Understandable.
And I just didn't trust a lot of people, especially lesbians. I always thought, oh, they're after something, you know, or I'll get hurt, or, you know, and part of it was I couldn't handle myself. You know, I couldn't handle my feelings about sexuality, and I didn't want to, you know, I felt like in some ways I became sort of addicted to sex or something, you know, because that was like the key thing that was the most important.
Right.
Is this an attractive person? You know, and I judge people wrong. I was wrong about how I judged them. You know, I didn't know them very well, you know, and so it was just very, I learned a lot.
So you made assumptions based on what they looked like.
Yeah. And thinking I knew them, I mean, you know, but I didn't really know them very well.
Right.
I mean, part of it was I didn't know myself, you know, my confidence had been shattered and my, you know, belief. And I just didn't want to be subject to that, you know, possibility again. So then,
I don't think that your story is singular. I think there are more women than we'd like to admit who have distanced themselves from the lesbian community out of various levels of concern, fear, bad experiences, feeling like it's a closed community and they can't get in. And I don't even know what we mean by community, because there are communities, there are so many groups of women. But but I certainly hear, did you use sports at all to help you through this? Because that's certainly, seems to me, the thread through your life.
Yeah, I think I did. I mean, I was in City Rec with, I had some friends, a couple of friends that were, they had a basketball team and they had a softball team and even a volleyball team. So when I was first starting to teach in Madison, I played sports with them. And then I've always loved to work out. So I got more into biking and taking care of myself. You know, as far, I used to run a lot. Now I've had these major surgeries, so I can't do that. But now I'm playing pickleball. So that, and I played tennis. I got in a tennis league, USTA tennis, and I was a good singles player. And then the team I was on, we were very strong. We won state. Jeez. I think we won state maybe twice. This was women that were in our 50s mostly, probably, 40s and 50s. And I also did, what else did I do? Can't remember right now, but yeah. Just working out more.
Swimming, probably, since
not
you're not
too
so much,
much but
then,
I've
huh?
been doing more of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's no wonder you're so good at pickleball.
Yeah.
With your tennis background.
Yeah, it has helped a lot. And I never imagined I would ever play that. You know, I just, I don't know. So, and I think when I was teaching, I felt confident in my ability to demonstrate and everything, you know. But when I had my hip replaced, it changed a lot of things because I couldn't play tag with the kids anymore, or I couldn't, you know, like.
How old were you when you had your hip replaced?
I was 55.
Early,
yeah.
So worn out from all your activity.
Yeah, osteoarthritis in the hip with bone spurs and stuff. Yeah, but I mean now it's good. It feels good and everything. But I think that I think I had that as an outlet. Like I said, I used to go running, so I love that. Skiing, I did cross country. Badminton.
Can you still ski with your hip?
I haven't tried it since my foot surgery, my hammer toe correction 2.5 years ago. I haven't tried skiing again because I can't bend my toes. They're like
mm-hmm.
flat.
Right.
So I just haven't tried it. Yeah.
Hmm.
But I think sports and physical activity has helped me to get out and just, you know, manage my weight a little bit. And it's an outlet, very positive outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been mostly non-competitive all these years, except for pickleball is more competitive. But I'm trying to keep that in perspective and not be overly competitive with that either. But
I was told that pickleball is the fastest growing sport in the United States.
Uh-huh. Mostly older adults.
Yes.
Yeah, seniors, baby boomers.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's fun and it keeps you active and social.
So did you see a difference, since you were kind of in the middle of it, when Title IX was passed? Were you aware of Title IX and what was the, do you remember the date?
Well,
I
know
women's
it was
history, but
80s. Well, it was 1971.
71, okay.
Right. And actually, I wasn't aware of it at the time, but I realized now, because I've read more about it in the last few years, that when I was coaching at Northern, which started in 1977, that really was resulted from Title IX, because there were a lot of years from 71 to 77 where they were still ironing out the legality of Title IX, because like the football coaches didn't want it.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, like the top men's basketball coaches didn't want it. But when I went to Northern, it was a fully funded Division II school, so that means I had 12 scholarships. We had a travel budget. We had uniforms. We had, you know, I was paid as a head coach, and that was my job, basically, was to coach the team. I was evaluated on how our team did. I also taught some, but mainly it was coaching. And then they had four other major women's sports there, too, that they were fully funding.
Uh-huh.
So we were at the forefront. And then after that was when the other schools started catching up. So then you could see the difference in recruiting, because when I was first recruiting, it was easy to tell somebody, come to Northern, here's a full ride,
yeah,
you know, and they came.
Yeah.
Then when these other schools got their funding, then it was more competitive.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right.
But,
huh. Yeah. Huh. How exciting.
Yeah.
So, did you play basketball for UW-Madison?
Yeah, I did, but it was very low-key. I mean, we, in the late 60s, we had what were called sports days, where you would go to, like, Stevens Point, and you'd play, one day you'd play, and you'd play all the other teams that were there. So if there were eight teams there, you'd have eight games, but only one day, you know? And so they had that in basketball and volleyball for sure. They had some badminton, I think. I don't think they had it in anything else. So we would get a group together. We'd get a t-shirt and put our numbers on the t-shirt and all head up there. We had to pay for our own way, you know, gas and everything, take our own cars. We didn't have coaches, but it was considered a sport. And so then when I went back to school at La Crosse, though, which would have been in 1973, they were, you know, you took a, I can't remember if we took a bus or what, but I mean, it was totally different by then. And part
because
of it,
Title IX.
It could have been to the environment, because at Madison, such a big school, who cares about women's sports? You know, nobody was really promoting it or anything like that.
And it's still suffering from that, quite honestly, I think, a little bit.
Yeah,
do you?
I suppose, yeah. I think they're demanding more now for women's basketball, especially. You know, because they've hired a male coach, which is the first male hired, but they feel he's the best candidate, and if he's going to turn the program around, then, you know,
so
more power.
What do
to
you
him.
Think about that? So we've hired our first male coach. We've had women coaches. What? I don't even exactly know my question, but there's this women's coaches, men's coaches, and, you know, as a strong feminist, I always look and say, yes, we want a women's coach, but of course we want someone who's going to give us a winning team. Do you think it's a sign of more equality to put a men's coach on a women's team, a good men's coach, even the fact that he would take it?
Well, I think I mean, I go with what Alvarez said, that he was the best candidate, because look at, we have a head volleyball coach who's a male, we have a head women's hockey coach who's a male, a head track coach who's a male. I think we still have a female tennis coach. I'm not sure about swimming and diving at UW, but, you know, I think we've suffered. I mean, and I'm not saying that these were bad coaches. Part of it was bad luck. You know, look at what happened to Bobby with the injuries and stuff like that. So if he's somebody who in the past where he's been has been able to turn a program around, we should give him a chance. You know, I mean, and if there was a pool of applicants and he was the one who was the best qualified and he interviewed the best and everything, you know, I think he deserves it. And and as you know, I mean, it's yet to be seen what his results will be and what his demeanor is with the players. You know, as far as like in practice, how is he going to handle them and everything. So I just feel like, because like when I first started coaching, it was all women who did all the coaching. And then you could see once, like in the girls' state high school tournament, then there gradually got to be more men. And now I think there's maybe only been maybe one woman or so, even in the high school, whose team makes it to state.
So it's,
I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I don't know what the difference is. If it's, I don't know if you'd say it's equality or what. I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know either.
And I mean, as long as he's fair to the players and he isn't, you know, like interested in them sexually and he, you know, has a good record as far as treating everybody equally and demanding, you know, he's a demanding coach, but yet he's also human. You know, in other words, he isn't.
Right.
Kind of like Pat Summitt. I mean, she got away with a lot of stuff. Abuse. She got away with abuse.
Yes, she did.
You know, which we didn't even really know about until we read her book.
Right.
So I wouldn't want a coach like that for my kid.
I wouldn't either.
I would want somebody that...
But we do love that she won, don't we?
Well, yeah, but she also was a little bit obnoxious,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Absolutely.
But, you know, but look at Gino. He's really obnoxious.
Yes. So what's that? That's an interesting... I mean...
Yeah.
People who write and study these things must study it intensely.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what they've come up with, you know?
I don't know.
Because it seems like the nurturing, do your best, doesn't quite work. There's mm-hmm. got to be some push, some kick in the butt, but how mm-hmm. far do you go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like even at Northern, I know when I left, there was a woman after me. But I think since that time, there's been all men.
Huh.
There and they, you have to win there. If you don't win, you're out. They give you a certain amount of time, but then so it's, and maybe some places have a different philosophy. Like maybe some of them want to keep a woman
mm-hmm.
always in mm-hmm. that position, mm-hmm. no matter what the results are.
I wonder if it's hard to be a woman in the athletic department. I've often mm-hmm. thought about that. I think of Barry Alvarez, these strong kind of obnoxious men that mm-hmm. kind of have this, it's almost like being the head of their own little castle or something.
Yeah. Well, you have so many of them, too.
Yes.
You know, it's not a small program there.
Yes.
But also they just, managing the egos for one thing, but then being able to build your program, because some of them, their programs were already strong, and then
right.
they got hired, like Chris.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. It'd be in some ways like teaching in a department that is mostly men.
Yes.
And there can be a dominant male in there, you know, as a chair, for example.
Yeah. Well, let's move to that. What was your experience like? You ended up at East High School.
Mm-hmm.
How many years did you spend there?
I spent 6 years there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, well, maybe tell me the schools that you were in Madison. How long did you teach in the Madison mm-hmm. district?
I was there in Madison about 20 years. And I was first at Randall Elementary and the SAPAR, the school-age parent
mm-hmm.
program. And that was a 70% job total. So it was part-time. Then after that, I went to Emerson. So I was there full-time for 10 years. And then I was at East for just 6. And it was very challenging to be at East, to be honest.
Uh-huh. What was challenging about it?
I guess it was a large department, six people, four of whom were East High graduates. A male department chair who was very dominating, I felt. And there was no organization in the curriculum at all, no progressive,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
type of curriculum. I feel like I'm like bad-mouthing the place right now, but this is how I see it
mm-hmm.
from my experience and my perspective. So I had, and nobody wanted to teach freshmen, so I had mostly freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a different gym. I was in the what's called the spectator gym upstairs, whereas they were mostly all in the field house. And so my kids had to go down to the locker rooms and then come back up. And so there were issues about changing, you know, should
right.
they change or should they not change? And then the curriculum, there was no equipment. When I got there and I did an inventory of the equipment room in the spectator gym, I on one page, I maybe had 10 items. One volleyball, you know, six basketballs, whatever. So I was lucky. I went over to Emerson and I said, you know, can I borrow some stuff? So they let me borrow whatever I needed until I was able to talk to the department chair and say, you know, I need some money to get some equipment. We have nothing in the spectator gym. And finally he said, okay, you can. So then I was able to start establishing a curriculum that I wanted, which was, I thought it was a good curriculum. I mean, I didn't have 3-week units like they did in the field house. I had, sometimes it would only be a week, but I wanted to keep changing what we did so the kids wouldn't get bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to get them to
and
participate.
They were freshmen. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted them to participate because that's how they earned their points, was participating.
Yeah.
There was no standard grading system, so I had to make my own. Swimming, there was a requirement supposedly for swimming, but you know what? Not every freshman teacher. Well, that really it was mostly me that taught freshmen, but you know, some of them only did a couple days. Some of them just had free time the whole time for swimming. You know, and I taught them. Tried to teach them how to do the strokes and everything, and I made it a requirement that they had to pass swimming in order to pass the quarter.
Okay.
You know, which is strict, but I thought,
did that make them mad at you because the other kids got free time when they had to actually...
Well, I gave them free time at the end of the lesson. Okay. You know, I always tried to have a fun game and then just free time. But I think it probably made them mad, you know, because it was something that I had a way that they had to get so many points for each class that they participated in. It was a lot of work, but I, you know, like what changed me was one day teaching swimming my first year, 6 kids in the water, 19 kids on the bench, all like socializing and laughing and giggling.
And 14 years old.
Yeah. And I just thought, I'm not gonna do this. I'm not gonna babysit. And I've got to watch the group in the pool and the group sitting in the bleachers, and they're just making a mockery of it. And I just thought, I'm not gonna do it. So then I changed the grading system for that. And the interesting thing is when the department chair had a freshman section, he didn't do swimming. He said, I'm not gonna do swimming. And so he didn't make his kids go to the pool. But anyway, see, this is what I mean about I feel like I'm bad mouthing. But also I feel that I found that there was a lot of racial disparity at East. It was very hard for me coming from an elementary school, even though I had taught high school, but many years ago.
Mm-hmm. And college.
Yeah, but I don't know, I just felt disrespected.
Do you think
especially by the black kids?
Really?
And I didn't feel comfortable coming out.
Right.
I did not feel comfortable. And I taught health, and I didn't even feel comfortable coming out in health.
Yeah.
And now was that me that could I have made it better for myself if I would have come out? You know, I don't know. I mean, I just chose not to during those 6 years.
You can only go with how you feel. When you say you didn't feel comfortable, was that not feeling safe?
Yeah. Yeah. Not feeling safe. I thought I'd be harassed. I thought there'd be parents that were homophobic and kids
especially
that were homophobic.
Especially as a phi ed teacher.
Yeah. Well, there were three women on the staff, all were lesbians. Yeah.
Were they out?
Yeah. I don't think one of them was, but I think the other one for sure.
But that
was.
Didn't help you.
No, I don't know what it was. I mean, I think it was the, I just felt very insecure there, you know, like making that switch from elementary to high school. But yet I had to do that, I thought, because, well, first of all, I always wanted to teach high school.
Sure.
Secondly, at the elementary school, they were talking about surplusing, and I'd have to be at 2 schools. And there were a lot of special projects I did for the kids at Emerson that I wouldn't be able to do anymore because physically, you can't be in 2 places at once and still do extra units. I used to take them over to the pool, to East to swim and all kinds of different things. But so I just, I just felt like I had to try it. So when I was surplused, then I found out about this opening at East, so I applied. But then after I had already applied, then they took away the surplus, so I could have stayed at Emerson. But then they got a new principal, and most of my friends that stayed there said, you're lucky you weren't here when this person took over. Mm-hmm. So I figure it was maybe meant to be. Mm-hmm. But I think what really is true about East is I had a lot of growing to do. You know, I just really did. I had, you know, I came in, I probably thought I was good, a good teacher.
Sure,
good,
well, you were hot stuff. I mean, you played at a national level. You were incredibly skilled.
Yeah.
And you taught all kinds of levels. So, of course, you, I hope, had an image of yourself as being very good.
I don't think it mattered there. To
yes.
be honest, I don't.
Yes.
And so it made me look at myself so much. I mean, it was, now I've been able to look at myself more because I've been retired for 5 years. But I you know, I had a lot of anger, you know, because I felt there was favoritism.
Sure. And you were probably right.
And actually there was one person there, one of the women, who I had had a brief involvement with, but I didn't want that to be a reason not to go there. And so that was difficult. But
yep.
I resolved it eventually and mm-hmm. tried to be totally professional and things like that. So, I mean, I was so screwed up at one point in my life. What am I doing teaching, right? So, anyway, so I feel like I just had a lot to learn, you know. Like,
yes.
I mean, I had this textbook image of what high school PE should be, what high school health should be, you know, and it was the complete opposite there.
Yes.
I mean, it was, you know, and whose fault is that? I couldn't change that. I could only change
right.
what I taught.
Right, because
you know? You
were working
but
in
it
a
was,
very rigid system.
It was so much work, very hard, but... Yeah. And I always wanted to teach health, but I taught with a minor. I mean, I should have really had more classes in health, but I had a lot of references, I did a lot of research, I got a lot of supplemental materials to use and everything. And
how did the kids respond? Like, how would you do the gay section?
Well, I showed a couple, I showed this, the one straight-laced, How Gender's Got Us Tied in Knots. I don't know, I just talked about it. A little bit, but I never said I was gay.
Right.
You know, I didn't do a lot of lecturing. I had a lot of paperwork for them to do, worksheets and stuff like that. And I had some speakers come in.
Sure, that's always good.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know. Like I just never had the courage to say, you know, I'm a gay person and.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do I regret that? I don't know. I mean, at the time, I just.
Well, you could only do what you could do.
So part of my experience was my own things that I was struggling with on the inside.
Sure.
Didn't help my attitude and my...
I think teaching is interesting because I think that you can be an absolute psychological mess going through the hardest thing in the world and yet walk into a classroom and forget all of that, really, because it's so intense.
Yeah.
And just do your work. So there are two ways to look at it, that it may have affected your ability to be in the classroom and what you did, but on the other hand, it may have been a saving grace for you.
Yeah.
I certainly can relate to that, mm-hmm. that you just put yourself somewhere else and you mm-hmm. no longer have to worry about that or think about
it. You have to do it.
You can't even think about anything else.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's survival, kind of.
Yeah. And you're trying to do what's best, you know, for the kids and everything. And
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was even a little paranoid because, like, my office was in the girls' locker room. And I shared my office with one of the women. And then just around the corner and down a little bit was the other woman. So the girls changed and stuff in there. And I always felt like, you know, like... If I came out and they'd say something like, oh, well, she's looking at us or something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why.
Yeah.
That's how paranoid I was, you know?
But you had reason to be paranoid.
Yeah.
You hadn't had really terrible experiences, but you're an educated person. You knew what was going on in the country.
Yeah.
And the kinds of things. I mean, are you familiar? Was it Mary Mastaglio?
Yeah. She's a friend of mine. Yeah,
yes,
she's a good friend of
mine. The terrible experience that she had.
Yeah, people stoning her house. And,
So just knowing that would be enough.
Yeah. I think that another factor was this thing of the four that were from East, the graduates. And the woman was like cool, you know.
Yeah.
A cool person. But I thought she was a terrible teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, who am I to judge? You know, because I couldn't be cool. You know,
right.
I just wanted to try to be myself. But yet, I was older. I was definitely older than all the rest of them.
How old were you at the time?
Well, I retired at 64. So when I went there, I would have been 58.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it actually extended my teaching career to go there.
Uh-huh.
And I really wanted to teach one more year, but then Act 10 came. In 2011,
right.
And I just couldn't take any more stress, you know.
Yeah. And that's when you retired.
That's when I retired, yeah.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to wait to 65, but it worked out for the best. But still.
So I'm curious about the other lesbians. Did they befriend you? So,
no.
Did you feel that you were in a support group at all?
No.
Wow.
The one woman who was the East grad, what was definitely out, totally accepted. She and her partner, you know, were having children. They had two children during the course of the time that I was there. And, you know, the kids would talk to her about her family. She'd show them pictures and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other person was, at times, verbally abusive, I thought, but I learned how to handle it, and I...
To you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I felt definitely not supported by her. But yet I also, like I said, I didn't want that to be a reason not to go there.
Yeah.
And it ended where she retired that same year, and then she moved away from the city. And I would say hello and try to be friendly and stuff like that, and she'd say, just don't ever talk to me again. That was those were the last words she said to me. She yelled to me across the gym, you know. And so
that's
I didn't,
terrible.
But I tried to just, you know, I didn't want to engage in a negative way with her as much as possible. And when she was thinking of retiring and I was thinking of retiring, we were at a staff meeting, the six of us in our department, and she said, you know, she had asked me, how much money did I make? You know, and I said, well, I really don't think that's your business. You know, I'm not going to tell you.
Good for you.
And so then, you know, then there was a comment made during our staff meeting, and she was sort of complaining about me or whatever, and the other people in the department said, you know, stop that. That's not true. She's not asking you how much money you make, and you don't have any right to ask her how much she makes. And so they were supporting me, you know.
Good.
And I had come out to one of the male staff for sure. He was, I felt, somewhat supportive, but they were all, in some ways, sexist, I think,
mm-hmm.
those men were.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I like them. They were
right.
Decent guys. You know, the department chair was, he was helpful to me in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, but, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying.
But you know what? In the whole school, people weren't out. I didn't even know who all was gay in the department,
mm-hmm.
in the whole school, I should
mm-hmm.
say. Yeah.
That
so
was the way it was
other,
at Memorial, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that was, like I say, 5 years ago, so maybe it's changed by now, but I doubt it. But
mm-hmm.
in Emerson, I wasn't out there, but there was, for sure, there was one other woman, and she was very out. She had a partner, and they had children, and she was very well accepted by the staff and everything. And
but
yeah,
yet that, seeing that did not, I think it's really interesting, didn't help you feel any safer to do it.
No, it did not. No, I was different. I don't know if it was my age difference, partly. I didn't want people to know my business. You know,
yes.
I wanted it to just be, it's my job.
Yes.
And I care about the school and how you know, the teams do and
mm-hmm.
the drama department and the music and all that. But I didn't want it to be my whole life. You
right.
know, and
you didn't want that intimacy with the students. And
yeah, I didn't know how to do that.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand.
Really, you know, sometimes I even felt I'd always say the wrong thing to them, you know. Anyway, yeah. But I'm glad I went there. I will say that I'm glad I went there because I learned a lot.
Yeah, it stretched
you. Know? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it really did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, up until the time then that you retired, I'm thinking of a photograph. I actually have it in my photo album because I downloaded it from, it's a gay pride photo, and you
mm-hmm.
just got this big smile on your face, and I don't know if you're walking with a flag or you've got the colors on. But it's just this
yeah.
wonderful photo of you marching in
yeah.
Gay Pride.
Yeah.
Did
you begin
doing that after you retired,
yeah.
or had you always done it?
Well, I went to the gay march, probably starting at least 5 years before I retired, because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it. I wanted to step out, and I wanted to
yeah.
be able to be proud of who I was, you know,
yeah.
because part of this all went back to my parents. And my father, I think he would have
sure.
totally disapproved,
yes.
you know, if he knew I was a lesbian. So I started going to those, and then once I retired, I joined Rollers and Gay and Gray, and I even went to Women for Women for a while, and you know, I just tried to be out more.
And how does that feel?
Good. Yeah, it feels good. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like, or it sounds like you're really coming into your own.
I don't know about that. I suppose in some ways, yeah.
But I'm sure the surgeries have slowed you down. Yeah, being the athlete that you are, it's hard to imagine how hard that must be.
Well, I feel like I have to take good care of myself, you know, because I don't want to have another hip replacement or have to have whatever done. But I will if I have to, but I don't know. It's part of aging. I mean, there's people playing pickleball. One guy has two artificial knees and an artificial hip. You know, so what do I have to complain about, you know? And I'm up and about, and I can go there. And there's
and you bicycle, and you swim.
Yeah.
What about during those years, there are various sort of institutions in Madison. I think about the Lesbian Variety Show. Did you ever go to that?
No, I never did. I used to go to Apple Island a couple times.
You did go to Apple Island. Yeah. I'm so glad you were able to experience that.
And I had some lesbian friends, but most of that was through sports. And
Sure. That was your contact.
I just didn't do that much in the community.
Well, when you're working full time.
Yeah.
You were extremely busy.
Oh my God! Especially at East, there was no time.
Right.
Correcting papers at night, taking a day on the weekend to do get ready for the next week. It was.
Don't miss it yet. I don't miss it for one nanosecond, and I was quite happy at my job. I love being lazy, doing things I really want to do like this.
Yeah. Oh, and you did it in the classroom way more than I did, because mostly when I was coaching or teaching, well, at Northern I did have like some classes that involved more paperwork, and at the university too, but at Emerson you just planned your lessons and you just went out there and taught. There wasn't correcting papers at night.
That's
you just
good.
Recovered at night physically, you
right,
know, from having
right, right.
10 classes in a day or whatever. but with health especially, it added a big workload. But I'm, like I said, I'm still glad I did it, because I
of course,
you know,
it's all
I
part
always
of who
wanted
you are
to try
now.
It. And,
yeah.
And I've been back to East. I've been in contact with my staff there, the staff I was on, and I have some friends who either still teach there or who recently retired, and so I feel like I've, for a while I didn't want to go back there. You know, I had these negative vibes or something, or memories, but then I just finally just went back and just realized that it was part of my life, and I've moved on, but yet I don't want to just absolutely cut it off, you know?
That's very thoughtful of you.
Well, I had some nice discussions. I went back at teachers' convention time in November, or not at teachers' parent conference time, and talked, like, to the department chair for a while. And here he had a knee replacement, you know, and so... And it wasn't going too well, and just so he could sort of empathize maybe with getting older, but
Did you ever go, Fallen Women Productions had put on concerts from, the late 80s?
No, I've been to some of the plays at
Proud Theater.
Yeah, and some of those, I've been to some of those over the past few years.
Yeah, that's certainly a look at where the young people are today, isn't it?
Yeah. They do a nice job with their productions. And
what about the festivals? Did you ever go to National or Michigan?
No.
So culturally and politically, your life has actually... Your life was sports and work and negotiating all that and your own personal growth, and then you retired, and now you're reaching out into all those other areas.
Right. I also did a lot with my family for a while. It was very much a part of my life.
That's true, since they're here.
Siblings and nieces. No, they're not in Madison, but nieces and nephews.
That's right.
And other relatives. But then I also realized that their life cannot be my life. You know, I can be in their life, they can be in my life, but I have to have my own life.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that. And still, I still have good relationships with them, but It's like my one sister says, aren't you glad we don't live in the same zip code?
And where do they live again?
Well, I have a sister in the La Crosse area, a sister in Appleton, a sister in Salt Lake City, a sister in Edgerton, a brother in Wrightstown, and a brother in Stoughton. So we're all still living.
Wow.
And I'm the oldest of seven.
All those sibs.
But anyway, that was, you know, a big, big part of my life, especially while the nieces and nephews were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're, the last one just graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting their own lives and everything. So that was huge in my life.
Sure. And do they know you? They all know you're a lesbian, but it's
talked
never
to
spoken
them.
Of?
No, I've talked to them about it.
Oh, you've actually talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
Has that helped you?
Yeah, it's helped me to be more honest and, and to not be afraid of their judgment and to just say, you know, like, take it or leave it, and
Do you have religious affiliations?
I'm what I call spiritual. I was raised as a Catholic, but I don't practice the Catholic religion.
Uh-huh.
So I go to Al-Anon. My family had a history of some alcohol abuse with my father and one of my sisters and some ancestors even before them, my grandparents. So I found that I've been actually going to Al-Anon for 20 years. So it helps me get grounded and
good for you.
Yeah,
good for you.
Other things too. So. Yeah.
So what do you think of? I'm kind of at a concluding point. What do you think of women's sports today? What, you know, now you play your own sports and you're an observer. And I know you go to the women's basketball games. Do you go to volleyball as well?
Mm-hmm. I go to whatever ones I can, but mostly volleyball and basketball.
Okay.
I think it's wonderful, the opportunities that they have, and they are so skilled. I mean, they're just unbelievably skilled, and I'm happy for them that they have so many opportunities, and they can get the full scholarship, and they can play professionally, and, you know, so I think that they're lucky.
Yeah.
Really lucky.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge them for their opportunities, because I felt I was lucky to have the opportunities I did, which most people my age didn't get
that's
to play
true.
AAU and you know, stuff like
and
that.
And that has shaped your entire life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And probably plays a pretty strong role in how fit you are today and your desire to maintain that fitness.
Yeah, it's probably... Probably I'm more fit now than I was even when I was playing. I mean, I used to run a lot and I was fit, but I had carried a lot of extra weight, I felt. So I'm way better now that way.
Interesting.
Eat in a more healthy way. And,
Well,
lucky
thank you.
To be alive.
Yeah, any last words you want to say before we close?
Thanks for the opportunity, and I know this is all in the strictest confidence, and just it's nice to have you doing this project and get a chance to
thank you
share with you.
Yeah, it's been very nice doing it. Thanks, Anita.
Sure.